Brandy Stamper had followed every instruction the world gave her, until she was sitting on a beach on a family vacation where she should have been at one of the happiest moments of her summer. As she watched her kids play in the ocean, her husband turned to her and said, "What's going on with you?" That moment was not the breakdown. It was the first moment she began to let go of her ideas of success and started to question why she wanted them in the first place. Hi, welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm here today with Dr. Brandy Stamper. She is a teaching professor at UNC Charlotte, PCC executive coach and author. She empowers high-achieving leaders and founders to escape burnout and build a legacy by design, blending behavioral science, communication, human design, and the Enneagram to help clients break through the success paradox. That's in capitals, so it's like a term, success paradox, and redefine what real success means. Welcome, Brandy.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you're so welcome. So let's talk a little bit about, let's start with like an overarch of like where you kind of started out in your career and personal journey, where you got to your point where you're like, I got to change everything, and then what you did.
Absolutely. So I started off in what I guess you hear in terms of taking a traditional path. So in order to work in corporate, you have to go to college and get a bachelor's degree. So I started off there and I was in school for psychology and communication studies. And I got an internship at a position. It was a personality testing firm. Essentially, what they would do is they would go into businesses and do different types of workshops and trainings using Best Fit. So it was the idea that they would use some type of personality system and from there help managers figure out how they work best and try to create the job that would fit their personality type of thing. So I thought that stuff was so cool. I loved it. I enjoyed it. And what I come to find out, if you're in the psychology realm, you also need a master's in order to actually work in corporate. So I was like, yeah. Oh, okay, that's cool.
Makes sense.
So let me go get my master's, right? So from there, I'm taking this traditional step-by-step ladder. Like it's not this one path, it's one way. So I go through my master's and I'm still working at that personality testing firm. Again, I enjoy it, but my department chair of my master's program was like, hey, I know that you do a lot of training and workshops, and would you be interested in teaching? I was like, huh, let me, you know, that'd be very interesting. I like that. So went in there, started teaching, and I never looked back. So I was hired on at the university, and I was teaching undergrad classes, but also within there, I was a consultant. Like for the university. So there were certain special projects that would come in and I would work as a consultant under the university name. So still in the IO psychology, organizational communication realm.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was great for a while. So
hopefully it starts off great, right?
Always. Yeah, right. Everything's great. It's hunky-dory. But then I start noticing some things that weren't quite, I guess, kosher for me. So I was working a lot, just like a lot of people do. However, I wasn't really fulfilled. Like what excited me about the consulting work, it did not necessarily do that anymore. And the teaching piece did not really excite me anymore. And it was like, well, nothing has fully changed in the sense of the structure, systems, all those things. So what's going on? So by that point in time, in addition to that, I had went back because I was basically told that in order to continue moving up, you needed to go get your doctorate. So in that, during that process, when I started to feel that something wasn't right type of sensation, it was like, hey, you need to go get your doctorate. Maybe that's the reason why.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I went and got my doctorate in leadership. And it was like,
what kind of leadership?
Educational leadership.
Okay.
So from there, they're like, okay, now that you have a doctorate, you're considered the head consultant on different projects. You know, this should explain part of the reason why you might not be fulfilled. So I did that for, you know, I still was teaching, still consulting on projects, and it still wasn't right. And I was like, okay, what's going on here? And I was at this point, I had reached this point of burnout, overwhelm, which most high achievers reach. And I remember sitting on the beach with my husband during our family vacation. We take a 1 week family vacation at the beach every year. That's like, no matter what, that's our minimum vacation we take. sitting on the beach, and I was just zoned out. I wasn't paying attention. I mean, I was paying attention to my kids and that make sure they wouldn't get there if there was any riptides or something coming.
That's a lot of attention, to be fair. Yes.
Yeah, it is a lot of attention, but at the same time, it was just empty. It was just going through the motions.
Automatic, yeah.
Yeah, and so my husband's like, you know, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, you just, you're a shell of yourself. And I'm like, okay. And so, you know, having that conversation, it was to the point of I didn't know what to do and why I was not fulfilled. So then I started going down the rabbit hole of, okay, I know all about these different personality tests. I understand MBTI, Workplace Big Five, True Colors, DISC, like all those. We use those all the time in assessment, in organizational culture, all these other things. And one thing I never really understood with this personality assessments is that they never explained the reason why you do what you do. Essentially, it just said, here are your behaviors, and here's how you do different tasks, and here's how you want to adapt based on these behaviors. Something I thought was very interesting is that I had noticed my personality had somewhat changed over time, meaning in my early 20s, high extrovert. I mean, I was life of the party, right? And I could keep going, 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 going. And as I got older, I became more of an ambivert. So I was in between. Like I could go and have those extroverted situations or, you know, but I needed time to recoup, not as much as someone who's an introvert, but I needed more time to energize. And it's like, well, the personality assessments didn't say anything about this change over time, right? Mm. And I said, okay, well, something is going on internally. So it's not necessarily the external world. It's more of what's happening internally. So let me see if I can explore maybe why what's going on, because the personality test never gave the why. And that's where I got into this deep dive of the Enneagram, mm-hmm. where the Enneagram is a type of personality test, but it's based on a more ancient wisdom. And it actually explains the motivations behind the why. Why do you do what you do? And what's interesting about this particular assessment is that it talks a lot about you've created these defense mechanisms in your life in order to survive. Now, these defense mechanisms are both good and bad, right? They have created superpowers for you, but they've also been your kryptonite. So for example, me, I am a self-preservation Enneagram 3. Essentially, what that means is that I'm the doer of the Enneagram. So I get things done. I'm very efficient. And this is in part, I can lean towards being a workaholic much more than other individuals with Enneagram. And so this, in some ways, explains why I might not have been as fulfilled. Because guess what? For me, I kept moving the goalpost for all my different accomplishments.
Which the world does for you too, to be fair.
Right, right. And at the same time, that's like, okay, when I earned my doctorate, right, it was 4.0 GPA honors. And it while I was earning my doctorate, I, fun facts, still worked full time. I also had a young child. I was also pregnant with my second child. And we were building a house. And when I say building a house, it is we didn't have a general contractor that took care of everything. We physically frame the house. Like the only thing we subbed out was the heat and air, the plumbing, the HVAC, and like the roof.
Electric.
Yeah. We did everything else. So we were on the weekends doing all this. And this was during COVID, and I still got my, you know, my doctorate, like dissertation, defended, whole thing. And you know, the funny thing is right after I got that, everybody's like, Brandy, you should be so proud. This is phenomenal. I'm like, yeah, it is what it is. Like there was no celebration. And the Enneagram helped to
explain. You may
explain.
Have been too exhausted to celebrate. I might want to add that.
Well, that's part of the workaholism, the overwhelm. Mm. And so that really helped explain. And the interesting piece is that as Enneagram 3, I'm motivated by success. So to look successful and the way the world perceives success is you have to have the credentials behind your name in order to be successful, like, you know, these different things. So that was a real eye-opener for me. And so then I was started to understand why I felt the way that I did and how can I start to build and create a life for me that was that I was more fulfilled in and that I enjoyed. So that's part of that piece. And then in addition, the Enneagram, I was like, well, you know, a lot of that is based on defense mechanisms, right? But there's something more to that. Like, we are born in a certain point of time And there are certain ways that you're energetically built, right? And so then that's when I started looking at human design to help blend and bridge that gap between the idea of how our energetic engine and then what we do from our defense mechanisms based upon our experiences. And then it just blew up for me, meaning that I am what I call a guide or a projector. And so I'm only 20% of the population. And the way I was operating in society was operating like a builder or a generator, which is about 70%. And the problem is the builders are like the doers, right, in this sense. And I am not built to have this constant energy to do, which explains why, one, my defense
mechanism. But you managed to do it for years.
Right. And it explains the burnout piece because, yes, this is how I found success, and this is why I'm motivated to do what I do, but I'm working against my biological nature. So now I understand I work in sprints, and this could possibly be the reason why I loved basketball, because you had a quick sprint, and then you're done. Like soccer, oh God, no, I wanted nothing to do with, because I didn't like the idea of having to run all that time. Basketball, I've got four quarters, and it's only so long.
And just run here and then go, and then
right. I go, I cross the half court line, and I can rest for a minute. So, but all that being said, is that these systems have really helped me understand myself at such a deeper level that now I am more informed and can operate from a space of clarity, from a space of confidence. And it's not what I should do anymore. It's more along the lines of, this is how I am built to operate. Therefore, this is what I'm looking for. And it has removed so much stress, the burnout. Right. And then that's in part why I like to help leaders and entrepreneurs for this, is because a lot of high achieving individuals have exposure to these different personality systems. They've probably done a number of different things. The issue, what happens is that there's always this information, but there's no insights to action. It's like, how do you actually take this information and apply it in your career or in your life? And that's in part when I opened up my own practice. I'm still at the university because I still enjoy teaching. But at the same time, I opened up my own practice and moved away from the consultant piece from the university, because now I get to choose my clients. I get to work with those who are ready for this. And it has been just a beautiful helping individuals build that legacy and get out of that burnout cycle. Because again, a lot of high achievers are operating against their own biology,
right?
Because this is what they've seen other successful
that's
people
what they're
do.
Told is the right
that's
way to
told.
Do. You're unhappy. Here, hold on. I got a prescription for you. Do this.
Yeah. Exactly. And even so, and I love mentors. Mentors are great. Some of the issues with mentors is that they are giving you their perspective based on what worked for them. The problem is that their strategies might not actually be the strategies that work for you, because you are built differently.
Right.
And so that's where understanding from the human design piece, understanding your energetic engine, understanding your strengths based upon your completed channels, where you can draw this consistent energy. Then from there, you have different pieces of adaptive intelligence. So your centers might be open different than someone else's. So it can help explain what strategies work best for you. And so if your mentor says you need to post on Instagram 3 times a day, because, you know, that's how you're getting your followers, right? They might be a generator. And if you're a projector, you're like, that's a waste of time. I'm here to guide and mentor people. So how can we use that strategy that works best for you in order to put you in the rooms that you're meant to be in versus screaming out into the world? Because that's not how you're built, and you're going to attract the wrong people anyway. And you go to like the not self theme, and then you go into your autopilot, your defense mechanisms to keep pushing. So it's really, it's
you
about
end up totally burned out.
Yeah. Again, right? Yeah. And you hear this all the time from individuals who are in corporate transition to become an entrepreneur. They're working longer and harder than what they did in the corporate world, and they go back to the corporate world. And it's not to say there's not hard work in entrepreneurship, right? But it's, they don't understand that they're trying to force their way for something to happen, and that could be energetically going against their biology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what immediate actions did you take? Like after you had that conversation with your husband on the beach and he's like, you're a shell of yourself. Like, did you take a sabbatical? Did you immediately go into like, what was your like, when you said, oh, I got to change something, what did you change? Like, what were the steps?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first I slapped him in the face. No, just playing.
How dare you?
Yeah, no, just playing. No. I really started questioning. I really started diving deep within myself. It was, you know, what's going on? Why? Right? Not necessarily what am I hiding, but it's more of, you know, why am I not fulfilled? Why am I just going through the motions? And it was getting real with myself, right? It was, and then I started to explore. I was like, okay, well, right now, first thing I thought was maybe it's my job. Maybe I'm not very happy with my job. So even though I did the logical thing of looking at pros and cons of my job and what would happen if I would go somewhere else. And I started saying, well, in part, it seems as though I am stuck in a system that I don't get to guide and create. More of it's you're told that you must do something this way because this is the way the curriculum is. And you are given 50 students in your class and have at it, right? But it's not necessarily a guide. It's more along the lines of you must have this type of assessment. You must have these types of things. And, you know, that was really draining for me.
You're more of a knowledge worker than a guide, right? You're more like, okay, serve up the hamburgers of knowledge. Here's how you do it, right? Instead of working with each person individually. Is that kind of what I'm getting?
In some ways. Yeah. So for me as a guide, I'm more of a mentor guide. So from there, I take different pieces of knowledge and I'm really about helping people structure their lives or their situations because I can see what they can't see. Like I was always very good at puzzles.
Now, but like in comparison to what you were doing in the college is what I'm saying, in your consultant work in the college.
Right. Yeah. So in the college, it was just more of here's the test. Here's the knowledge for the test. And if you want to pass the class, here's what you have to do. And in part, some of that comes from public education of the sense of teaching to the test, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's when students get into their undergraduate degree, it's a shocker for when you have professors who are more like, you know, why are you here for college? What are you trying to gain out of this? And asking these bigger questions and helping guide them, trying to guide them into a major that is fulfilling for them and help them think through how are they going to, what's the ROI of what they're doing in this major and what they're going to do in their career. And they just want to be told what to do. It's like, no. Right. And that was disheartening for me seeing that happening.
Well, especially since that's kind of what your experience was that it caused you to burn out, right? Is that you said, I'm unhappy. And you're like, oh, well, here's the next step. Okay. And so you were doing that. So for you to advise other people to do that, I can imagine would be draining. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So now what's nice is that in part why I'm still at the university is I know this about myself and I know that I still have to stick to certain parts of curriculum. Like you're never getting away from that. However, I can navigate this a little bit more to where I can put in different sections like of the work about, okay, let's really question about this particular major, right, that you're in. What can you do with this major? What are your career aspirations? And how does that match what interests you? So we talk about values, we talk about interests, and we talk about passions. And then from there, looking at how we can blend that into what they're doing and where they're going. And then from there, you know, some students love it. And they're like, thank you so much. They'll come back 5 years later and they're saying, thank you so much for what you did. Your class was changing and this is the reason why I am where I am. At the time, students don't like it because they're like, just give me the answer. And so I can get the grade and move to the next class so I can graduate.
Right.
And so that's what was draining for me. It was like, no, this is your time to do this. Because if you just want the answer, just go and get a job. You don't need college. Just go get a job and get the answer that way.
Right. Yeah, it's funny when you think, as you started talking, I was thinking about, you know, the fact that you are in psychology and it's so much more open to exploring you know, the depth of your internal operations and how that affects your, you know, your experience and your manifestation in the world, for lack of a better term, right? But think about how hard this must be from somebody who comes from an entirely analytical, not that psychology isn't analytical, but it's analytical in a more liberal arts way, right, than like hard sciences. Think about how hard it must be for somebody like that to come out of that. But I think a lot of people who do that, it's like an explosion because it's, you know, it's held down so long. Yeah, that's really interesting. So how did you find the Enneagram?
Yeah, so when I opened up my own business, I was in a entrepreneurial mastermind, basically. And one of the individuals who came in, she utilizes the Enneagram in her business. And so we started talking a little bit about what the Enneagram is. And I was like, oh, look, another personality test type of thing. And I started researching it more. And so, you know, part of my strengths and who I am is I am a researcher. And so I go deep of what we call like a technical expert, in that like, once I figure out something that I really like, I know all about it and I know every single piece of detail. Yeah. And so that's when it really started to click for me. Like, oh, this is why I got burned out so quickly. This is why I'm overwhelmed. And this is why, you know, X, Y, Z. It gave me the why. It gave me the motivation. Mm-hmm. And so that was great. And I was able to start working from there. Then, but there was still something else in it, and sometimes it's hard to explain, but there's still something else like nagging at me of, while yes, you understand that these were the defense mechanisms you needed in order to survive, and these are your strengths and so forth, why am I still leaning towards this piece of burnout? Like, why am I still overworking? Which I understand why. I mean, I understand this piece of, you know, I am a workaholic at the Enneagram, the doer of the Enneagram, so therefore I need to set boundaries. But why am I still leaning into this? And why am I still so tired if I know this and I stop myself from it, but I'm still tired, right? So then from there, it just so happened, I was listening to a podcast and someone started talking about human design. And I'm like, that's interesting, because
it's fairly new, isn't it? Human design?
No. Well, it might be new in circles, but it is based on four ancient wisdoms. So it has been around for...
I see. It's like a conglomeration of different philosophies.
Right. And the interesting piece about this is, like, in psychology, there was always the nature versus nurture debate, right? And it was always this understanding that both happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and the Enneagram, you know, it mainly, even though it does say it's about nature and nurture, to me, it seemed more nurture, because of, while you do have some foundational inklings, like when you're a child, you really, it's not fully developed, your Enneagram, the box that you're in, right? Those defense mechanisms, until you're older. That's why, you know, a lot of people say with the Enneagram, be very careful to assess children, because children are learning and developing, and you can't say that they're one thing or the other, because it's changing, right? Until they reach a certain point. So I was like, well, if that's the case, then we're missing the nature debate. Like, we're missing the nature piece. Mm-hmm, and that's where human design really came in to help me understand. This is the biology. This is the nature, the nature piece of that debate. Because, you know, in human design, with the four, it blends four different ancient philosophies. And basically, it's this idea of neutrinos at the time of your birth, your location, and so forth. There were neutrinos, which were extremely small particles that, you know, move through matter and space, move through you at a certain point and left an imprint on you. Mm-hmm. And so this imprint plays a role in how you are energetically built to operate in the world. Mm. And sometimes we can move away from this biological piece because of our circumstances, our experiences. Right. And it's like, if you start moving away from there, then this is where some of the more negative, not self things happen, from burnout, overwhelm, shell of yourself, all those things. And so it's, how can we understand that piece? And from there, when it starts to happen, when we start to move away, ooh, okay, stop. All right. So here's how we're going to make sure that we can try and create our life, whether that's our career or our personal life, to match more of what we are biologically meant to do. So that way we do not continue going down this auto pilot that happens from the Enneagram, because it got mm-hmm. us so far, right, for so long.
Right.
But we forget that with, it's all about yin and yang. With good comes bad. So
yeah,
there's this balance.
Yeah, and you have to take it with a grain of salt, right? Because right. like you can really get into like predeterminism with that. But what you're saying, it's reminding me of this thing. I don't know where I heard it, on some self-development tape way back in the day, where they were talking about the speed reading courses they used to have in like the East.
Yeah.
And they determined that like if you were a normal reader and you took a speed reading course, you could improve your reading by like 35%. But if you were already a really fast, good reader, you could improve your reading by like 200%. So it sounds like a very similar kind of thing, where when you're aligned with your natural tendencies, it's not that this is what you're built this way and you can only do this and that's it, and you have a trajectory for the rest of your life, but you will be so much more effective if you're working with where you're coming from.
Absolutely. It's like the idea of working with the stream, not against the stream, right?
Right.
So
Aikido.
Yes.
Of career.
Yeah.
Career Aikido.
Right. And so, you know, and the beauty with human design is it talks about we have open centers, which is our adaptive intelligence. So what it means is that we do not have a constant energy in this center, but this is where we also learn from those experiences. There are good and bad to both. So, for example, I have an open head center. So what that means is I take in all types of different ideas. So the beauty of that is that I'm not set in a particular way, in a particular way of thinking, and because I'm willing to take in all perspectives before or moving to a decision, that's the good of that. The negative piece of that yin and yang, right, is that I can get into like analysis paralysis, and that I keep taking information, and
I mean,
never
technically informations is correct. Yeah.
Keep taking that in and never make a move. And so it's having that deep awareness of yourself and being able to say, here is tendencies, how I'm built, different things, and then how do I move through that? There is no predeterminism, right? In this sense of you're only meant to go this way, you're only meant to go that way. What it is, this is how you are built. These are the recommendations about how to.
These are your tools that work really well. Yeah.
Exactly. These are the tools instead of using fun. So sometimes when you buy like little pieces of furniture from IKEA or from Amazon, you have to put everything together. Well, they give you the little bit tool that you use your hands to mm-hmm. screw it. Well, you could use that. It works. It might take longer. Or you can use a screwdriver that has that bit already and put it in, and it screws it much quicker. Exactly. So
or you could put one of those bits on a drill and go zzz.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Put that bit on a drill, right? So you can either do it by hand or by the drill. It's the tool that you use. And so the idea behind human design is that by using this tool, it helps you move through life, in this example, a quicker way. You get that product in a quicker, easier, less friction, right? Of a path rather than working against your natural biology.
Right. What are the different systems you said are combined within the human design system?
Yeah. We have four. The first is astrology, right? So a lot of people are like, oh no, it's woo woo, but it's the idea of Pisces, your different astrological houses.
It might be woo woo, but there's a reason it's been around for, you know, how many thousands of years.
Right. But it's very scientific. Yeah. Like if you get down into,
I've met Sagittarius's before and I don't have a good time with them. I understand. I believe you. They're lovely people, but not for me.
Right, right. But I mean, like, there's even more than just Sagittarius. It's your different house
right,
and
rising and moon and
right?
all,
yeah. all that stuff, right?
Houses.
So, but
stuff.
Then there's also the Chinese I Ching. So it's an ancient text of wisdom that talks about 64 different gates that deal with different parts of human interaction. Then there's the Kabbalah, which is the tree of life. So really looking at that tree of life, which serves as that structural basis for the 9 different energy centers. And then also it includes the Hindu chakra system. So it talks about the foundation is the foundations for the centers and how they function as energy hubs. So really it's taking these 4 primary ancient wisdom traditions and blending it through modern science. So the modern science piece is where they connect all of this is through the quantum physics, the neutrino theory, and this whole like genetic piece. So this is your unique energetic blueprint. And those are using these 4 pieces of ancient wisdom to really hone in what your energetic blueprint is. So it gets very, very technical, and it's amazing how in depth, and it's really rooted in more of the science rather than just the woo-woo.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting.
No, that's fascinating because I've been hearing about it since probably, I don't know, sometime in the 90s, but I didn't have enough. I just saw like they have a cool, there's like a cool diagram of a body and the stuff.
The body graph.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. It's just another thing. Because I've had so many experiences with stuff kind of like you're talking about the Enneagram, where you're like, oh, like that's kind of cool, but what do you do? What do you do with it? You wear a big, you know, like I'm a number 6 on your and you go to a party and people are like, oh, you're a 3, I'm a 6, you know,
right?
Yeah,
right. And what's interesting is that the purpose of this, because well, the Enneagram, all personality tests, but the one thing I don't like with some of the personality assessments is they try and say, okay, if you're a 6 and you're this, you know, woohoo, this is what we are. And the whole free personality test stuff, like there's a free Enneagram test out there. Nothing wrong with having just a basic idea. But the problem is that if you have that insight, is it the true correct insight? Because we all know that self-report, there's bias behind self-report. And
really? Huh. Wow. I never heard of that.
Well, we all know, but
yes.
If you come from a researcher background, there is
no, for sure there. I'm not disputing you at all.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
sure.
I know.
Yeah, there's.
So, in some ways, the Enneagram personality test, it can be flawed, right? Because people want to see themselves in a certain way. Now, there are certain types of questions that can help and all that. And when you do this self-report or these free tests that don't have the psychodynamics and the rigorous type of negative questions, you know, stuff like that, you're not really having the full insight and you don't have someone who can help explain and give you the action, right? So, oh, I'm a 3. Whoop-dee-doo. Like, what does that mean? And what do you do with it? And the beauty of that human design is it says, give me your exact time of birth and give me the exact location where you were born. And then from there, it takes where you were at that exact point and all those neutrinos and all the different 4 ancients of wisdom. And it spits it out and it says, here are the specific pieces unique to you. And this is what it means to live your, not to live your life, but the different pieces of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And this can help explain or give you insight and the tools in order to navigate where you're going and what you're doing. And that is a very beautiful, and it actually can provide transformation if you have someone who can help dispel it for you, because you're right. Like you see this body graph and you're like, oh my God, it's too much. No. And you just move on.
Or I've taken those tests in the past, like back in the day when they were all over on the free tests. And I was like, if I was in a different mood, I would get a totally different result. Like, in my opinion, it kind of really undercut the validity of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It did. And it's the same. It's very interesting in our society. We want results fast and quick. We don't want to wait on it, and we don't want to spend the time to work through it. And that's what really shoots us in the foot, quote unquote, until we get to a point and we realize this fast lane has only gotten us so far. And we can't go any farther. And then we start to go back and say, maybe I need to slow down and actually spend that time. And then from there, we can actually move in the fast lane and not have to pay tolls.
And that, yeah, take the metaphor all the way.
Yeah, I have to. I hate tolls, but we won't go. We won't get into that.
You said something in what's the success paradox? We mentioned that in your introduction.
Yeah.
And you capitalized it like it was a thing, the success paradox. So I wanted
well,
to ask
it's,
you about it.
Yeah. And to me, it's really that where high achievers feel this restless or unfulfilled, even after reaching these big milestones. Like you should feel successful or proud that you got a doctorate, right? Or that you got this promotion. Or it's really the success paradox is this disconnect between this outward achievement and your inner satisfaction. And the reason why I talk a little bit about this is, for one, as a society, we're told what success should be. So we think success is the big house, the white picket fence with the family and the dogs and having this much money in savings and these types of cars, like very outward type of achievement, right? And too often than not, we climb the ladder, we do the thing, we have the achievements, but we either keep moving the goalposts because we're not satisfied and we can't understand why we're not satisfied, or we don't really feel anything about them. We're just like, oh, yeah, doesn't everybody know how to do that? Or so it's taking this success paradox and really examining it and looking at why do we not have this satisfaction? Why do we not feel this way? Are we operating from a place that we're not meant to operate from? And so really it's about defining success on your terms instead of saying, I should be here. I should do this. Why? Why should you? Who says, right? And if it's like, well, my mentor, you know, at the age of 30 was here, right? And I'm doing the same things and I'm not there. Okay, well, maybe you're not meant to do those same things. And so here's the why. Maybe you're not satisfied because that's not what you're built, energetically built to do. Mm-hmm. You're energetically built to, for example, guide and mentor people. So you're in a job that you're constantly coding, right? Or actually, we take away coding because of AI and how AI can code. But you're constantly in a job to where you're, I don't know, writing social media stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing the work. And a guide or a projector is not meant to go in and be in the trenches, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're meant to help guide someone and help them look through these things. So you're doing something in your job that not energizes you. So even though if you are successful, there's a reason why you might not be satisfied or unfulfilled. It's because there's a part of your biology that says you're not built this way, right?
Yeah.
So how can we figure out something, even if you don't want to leave your job, can you negotiate a certain part of your job to help for that satisfaction? So yeah, that's the idea behind the success paradox. You look good on the outside, but on the inside, not so much.
Yeah, I often wonder, like, with this whole idea of like striving and striving and striving, and then when you get to your goal, you feel like not the celebration that you had expected to feel. And I wonder if people get so accustomed to the grind and feeling like the grind is progress that when they reach their goal, they feel like they feel unsatisfied because they've accustomed themselves to the grind.
Hustle, you know? Culture.
Yeah.
Hustle culture. And that in part can be some of those defense mechanisms, right? That you've crafted over the time, depending on, you know, what the grind means to you. It can be you grind and grind and grind for so long because you overworked and you said, well, if I work hard, I'll get this, right?
Right.
Or it could be that if I do not speak up, like if you're a 9 on the Enneagram, if I do not speak up and cause conflict, you know, I'll be able to move and continue to grind, right? But that can diminish, right? You can become bitter. You can become angry. Actually, more on the Enneagram, that side of the triad is more based on anger as the underlying emotion. So you become more angry at the grind, angry at what's happening. Very interesting. Like, and that's the whole psychological piece, I guess, that really I enjoy figuring out. Like, give me all the puzzle pieces. Let's figure out and give you some clarity.
You've
give
got
you
like
confidence.
The perfect container to work with these different tools, right?
Yeah.
That's
I really enjoy it. Yeah. I could talk all day long, so, about this stuff.
So So no, it's fascinating to me. Like I said, I've heard about human design for years and years, but I didn't, I had no idea it was based on those different modalities. That's really cool. So how do people engage with you? How do people work with you?
Yeah. So you can come check me out on my website, brandystamper.com. I try to make it easy, right? But there I have a free blueprint. So if you want to know what your performance style is in terms of the human design, it tells you a little bit about how you are meant to operate in the world and how to avoid burnout. So if you're in that space, go there, go to brandystamper.com/blueprint. That would be helpful. I'm on the socials. I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Coach Brandy Stamper, and I'm also on LinkedIn. So you can reach out to me in any of those ways.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. It's been fantastic talking with you today. Do you have any like final parting advice that you would like, if you had the opportunity to have something resonate in people's heads after they listen to this, what would you want that to be?
Yeah. So this is the funny one, but it's really true. You do you, boo. Have we heard that one? But I mean, it really truly is. It's, you are a gift in this world. You were brought here for your own journey. And it's okay if your path is different than someone else's. It's all about finding the strategies that work best for you, and you do you, rather than trying to be someone else. Because in the end, the more you try to be someone else, you're moving away from the gifts and what you were brought here in this world to do.
Yeah. And you'll be more frustrated and less effective, likely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Brandy. It's great to talk with you.
Thank you so much for having me. And I've truly enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you. Me too.